Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Do you know who's winning our NCAA brackets?
Well, no, I thought Justin was going to be back today. He was in charge of it, and he's still off on vacation.
Oh, so we'll find out when Justin gets back. Yeah, well, but, that'll be before the Final Four.
Yeah, but after the first round, do you know how many were left? 784, because people put Arizona, Iowa, I'm sure.
It was mostly
associated with Arizona, but can you believe that? In the whole country, only 784 matched. After the first round.
Yeah, so. That happens every year. Just the nature of the odds of it. But
I didn't predict these guys at all, did you?
Yeah, I have both San Diego State and Miami in my Final Four.
Of course you do, bragger.
Which is why I wanted to know who's winning, because I want to, somebody did better than that. I want to see it.
Oh, okay.
Could I have Miami winning at all?
Oh, and you know what? They came back, they're down 10 points with 9 minutes left, and they came back and won. And that coach is 73 years old.
Larinaga is great.
God, he's amazing.
And, of course, he took George Mason to the Final Four, another underdog, although even a more decided underdog than Miami, 17 years ago to the day yesterday. And it's just cool. He's got he loves that team. They love him. He's got a great relationship. And I hate to put a political layering to it, but
let's do it. Come on.
Well, it's just the nature of where we are these days. But I mean, to see an old cat like Jim Larinaga, an old white guy, but longtime respected basketball coach, and mainly a bunch of black young men, and the relationship they have around basketball, and also for the young men around their future from the coach's perspective, it's great. And that's what's great about sport. That's why March Madness is one of the few joys left in life, where despite the NCAA being a leftist organization, what actually happens during the tournament and the teams and the relationship between players and players and coaches and players and the players on competing teams, I mean, that's about as pure of sport as I think we have left in this country. But anyway, so the important thing is Miami is really helping me out. I like that.
The wallet department.
I've been on Miami since the beginning. I just think that it's a very difficult, and San Diego State too, because they play such tough defense. They're just very difficult teams to knock out, and especially San Diego State. You saw it in that game yesterday. They probably should have lost against Creighton, but
that bad call. I thought that was a bad call.
Yeah, but I mean, it's this is why basketball is really interesting too, because of matchups. Individual as well as team. And San Diego State, I mean, those are men playing against, I won't say boys, but their strength and their tenacity make up for the fact they don't have four guys on the perimeter who can knock down 22 footers all day long like Creighton does. It's really fascinating matchups. But anyway, I don't want to do Dick Vitale, chalk talk here.
Yeah, but this just in, we do have the standings. Quinn McCarthy sent them to us. Guess who's in first place? Dan Proft with 48 points, but you're tied with Jacob Fopma. He's our new engineer. He's got 48 as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Of course, the engineer.
Yeah,
He probably concocted some algorithm where I just use my basketball knowledge.
So you two are tied, and then I'm with 46. Justin and Quinn are trailing off at 36 points and 31 points.
Mm.
So, yeah, you might win it all, but I don't know.
Well, Miami is probably going to have to win it all unless Jacob the engineer has Miami, too. All right.
Yeah.
Well, so it's like March Madness in the studio here. It's that tight. All right. We have to get on to more serious things. If you believe Trump indictment watch day 7 is a serious thing. But we expect some action or the lack thereof this week, some resolution maybe in terms of whether or not the former president is going to be indicted by the Manhattan District Attorney or not, and the grand jury he convened. One of his attorneys, Joe Tacopina, was on, one of Trump's attorneys, was on with that yapping little terrier, Chuck Todd. And he actually, Tacopina did a pretty good job, even a better job than Chuck Todd usually does, of making an ass out of Chuck Todd.
Here, let me help you make an ass out of yourself.
Really, it was nicely done because, you know, he's so smug and ignorant, and that's a terrible combination. If you want to be smug, then you better know what you're talking about. And Chuck Todd was out over his skis because he's such a partisan hack. So the question was put to him initially by Todd, you know, did the whole Trump, I'm going to be indicted on Tuesday, that set all this fury into motion. Did he just make that up?
He was reacting towards a lot of leaks coming out of the district attorney's office. There had been a leak, Chuck, that Monday, the day before that Tuesday, there was a law enforcement meeting, including Secret Service and NYPD, that was going to go through the logistics of the arraignment. And then there was, of course, a lot of rumors regarding the arraignment being the next day. So he just, I think he just assumed, based on those leaks, that what was going to happen.
Which is fair, given that this kangaroo court convened by Alvin Bragg had been busy doing their work for some time. So, you know, he hears things that we don't hear, particularly any sort of communications or rumblings that Secret Service or his attorneys may hear coming out of the Manhattan DAs, including all the gossip columnists that are trying to extract any information they can about what's going on. So he jumped the gun with Alvin Bragg. And so why not? Why shouldn't he? What's wrong with that? In point of fact, whether you like Trump or not, you know, all the predicate you have to use to address this case. Whether you like him or not, or whether you even like his handling of this or not. I think so far he's acted in a perfectly sensible way, if you look at it through the lens of his legal and electoral interests. Not whether you like it, not whether you would handle this the same way, but from Trump's perspective, this is put yourself in the other guy's shoes. Is this the best play he can make, both legally and electorally? And I think it is.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You could always reach us all morning long, even during commercials, at 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
I just think that he has put Bragg back on his heels, and there's, now it's arguing about who made up what. He's got House Republicans looking at Bragg's office, and we want more information about the process here, particularly if there are any federal funds that make their way to the Manhattan DA's office, and a lot of federal funds flow down to local prosecutors. So it's their way to get the camel's nose under the tent, House Republicans. And he's got Alvin Bragg, oh, I made this up and this and that, and witnesses that are supposed to appear before the grand jury that don't appear before the grand jury, and rumors coming out of the DA's office in Manhattan from anonymous sources that say his assistant district attorneys don't know how this case is going forward, makes no sense to them as professionals, even though they don't like Trump. I mean, he's, again, flipped the script on his political opponent. Since this is all politics, that's a pretty good place to be. Tacopina, was also asked about the name calling, because, of course, Chuck Todd is so offended at the dehumanizing, and that's the word he used, rhetoric that Trump has used in the direction of Alvin Bragg, and whether or not that his defense attorney finds that helpful.
Mr. Trump has described Alvin Bragg this week as a Soros-backed animal, said he was doing the work of anarchists and the devil, called him a degenerate psychopath, and he called him a Soros racist in reverse, saying this is the Gestapo. As his lawyer, do you stand by those comments?
So Chuck, as his lawyer, I want to dissect this case because it's a case that shouldn't be brought and wouldn't be brought up for anyone other than Donald Trump. Let's be clear about that. Does anyone actually think, left, right, or in the middle, that anyone else will be prosecuted for making a civil settlement in a hush money case with personal funds? Of course not. No one's ever been prosecuted for that. You know, the closest we've come is John Edwards back in the day, where a donor paid $900,000 for his mistress and the child to be, you know, housed somewhere. That case was ultimately dismissed by Department of Justice after they couldn't get a conviction, and that was with the donor. The distinction here is so vast, and it's clear to anyone, whether you're on, again, if you're a supporter of Donald Trump or detract or don't like anything about Donald Trump, mm-hmm. we should all be concerned as citizens in this country about the weaponization of a prosecutor's office, and that is what this is. And I swear to you, 32 years as both a prosecutor and a defense lawyer, I've never seen an abuse of discretion like this.
Good for him.
And here's that's the deal. That's the point here is arguing about political rhetoric, that's somebody else's job. Let's talk about the case. But Chuck Todd doesn't want to talk about the case. And when he tries to, he gets his pants, which you'll hear in a second. He wants to talk about the rhetoric. And again, I mean, Trump throws haymakers and says things that maybe you wouldn't say in the direction of a prosecutor. But I mean, I think he has some standing to throw haymakers when he's been called everything under the sun. I mean, the name calling from the left, the Hitler, Stalin, totalitarian, racist, misogynist, blah, blah, blah. And Chuck Todd is so offended on behalf of Alvin Bragg that Trump is swinging right back, which is, of course, one of the things that Trump supporters love about Trump is that he'll swing right back. And if you want to take it to the mud pit, then let's go. I'll meet you there. You know, again, you don't like that political discourse. You find that unseemly. It's beneath a former president. Well, okay, fine. But, you know, let's apply a standard to the civility of our discourse that the left loves to apply unevenly, really. So Chuck Todd persisted. And, of course, invoking January 6th, you know, that kind of dehumanizing rhetoric that Trump is using in the direction of the Manhattan DA's office. We've been here before.
Here's the thing. We went through January 6th. So it's not like a possibility that Trump's rhetoric creates violence. It's already happened once. Are you not concerned this could happen?
Well, I'm not accepting that proposition that his rhetoric created violence. I think violence was on the way that day. But I'm not here to discuss that, Chuck.
And a little tutorial there for you.
Yes.
What Takapina did. You don't accept the premises of the left. You don't just respond accepting the premise and say, no, I don't think Trump's rhetoric is going to encourage any violence. And he's called for protest. But he means people. You say, wait a second. First of all, it's apples and orange groves. And secondly, his rhetoric where... I don't want to rehash January 6th another time, but we know he called for peaceful protests explicitly. His rhetoric had nothing to do with January 6th, and you don't have a nexus for it, and neither does the federal government.
Well, they're bringing this up because Bragg got a letter with some white powder in it that turned out to be nothing.
Right. It was sent to him by Jussie Smollett.
It was the SNW brothers. Yes.
Attack the premise. Now, the last piece of this,
yes.
When Chuck Todd, and this is one of the new talking points, so listen to this. This is one of the new talking points of the left
to justify
this investigation and potential prosecution. One of the new talking points is, hey, these business records cases, Alvin Bragg has brought a lot of them. Cy Vance, the Manhattan DA before Alvin Bragg, he brought a lot of them, too. I mean, this is a case that's brought all the time. And either we have equal application of the law or we don't. If it's wrong when Joe Schmo does it, then it's wrong when Donald Trump does it. And he should be prosecuted just like Joe Schmo would be. That's what Chuck Todd tried to pass off. And that's what you're going to hear other leftists masquerading as journalists try to pass off. And Takapina was ready for it.
This prosecutor has brought over 60, this one and the previous one, brought over 60 times over the last 4 years. This is not an unusual crime to charge somebody with in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. We have over 60 instances.
Oh, Chuck, you couldn't be more wrong when you make that statement. This, first of all, would be a case of first impression. Never in the history of this country has this been done before. And never in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office has someone been charged with a crime for falsifying business records to pay hush money, as they call it, or it's a confidential settlement in legal jargon, regarding a personal matter. Never in the history of the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. If there were a filing obligation, if he had taken a tax deduction, which he did not, that would be a crime. Mm-hmm. If he had used campaign funds, we'd have an argument here. This was a personal matter.
Go back to the kiddie pool, Chuck. Case of first impression, which he sort of explained, but just to be clear about it, case of first impression means that this is a case that is unprecedented before this jurisdiction, in this jurisdiction, before this prosecutor, before this court. It's a case that's never been brought. Yes, there have been business records cases brought, but the context here, the basis to bring this and try to level it up to a felony, which is
laughable,
everything we understand that Bragg is attempting to do, is unprecedented. Okay. Bob in Buffalo Grove, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Two topics. First, thanks for getting to me this morning, as Dan didn't get to me on Open Mic Friday to offer this news. It's hard to believe, but 13 years ago, I began listening to Amy. Friday marked her 13th year at WIND. First, it was
Did Amy know
John.
That?
No.
Does Amy know that? All right, go ahead.
Always the last to know.
Yeah, even though I'm retired, I still get up early to listen to you guys and your great comments. You're starting off great this morning to the Amy and Dan show. Sorry, Dan, but Amy started before you.
I got a seniority, yeah, sure.
Okay,
it's a
now,
union shop, yeah.
I watched Chucky Toad yesterday. He was just unbelievable. But there's also, you can possibly play sound bites from Donna Brazil over on This Week, because she was in... good scheme with regards to her attacks on Trump, too. And then, of course, you're going to talk probably about his speech at
Texas.
To that. I watched part of that. But this whole thing with the Bragg thing, my only concern is, and maybe you'll address the tweet. I've been getting stuff on the tweet, the picture, the bat picture in that got deleted, and then his text. I wish he'd be careful on what he offers in some of his.
Thanks for the call, Bob. Yeah, I get it. I mean the whole bat thing.
I don't have Twitter anymore because somebody stole my account. So.
Well, neither does Trump. Well, he doesn't use it. I think this is on Truth Social. He posted a New York Post story that had like a split shot of him with a bat and Alvin Bragg's picture, and he posted it. And so this was some sort of threatening of a prosecutor. Yawn. No.
But just be better, Trump. Don't do that. I mean, why is he going to do that?
P.T. Barnum, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
P.T. Barnum. And some people take that as a pejorative. You can take it however you want, but he's a showman. And this is what he does, and this is what he's going to do. He's 76 years old. He's not going to change. So you could like it or lump it, but this is Trump. And as I said, there are things that particularly, I'm sure, as his defense attorney is like, gee, you know, it's a little bit
provocative there.
Well, it crunches them up a little bit because they're looking at it through one lens, representing their client in a court of law. He's looking at it through a bigger lens, which is electoral in addition to legal, and I think in that order of priority. And in terms of how he's played this so far versus how Alvin Bragg has versus how the left has, I mean, this has been a gift to Trump from Alvin Bragg and the left, an absolute unadulterated gift to him. And if you give him a gift, He won't look that gift horse in the mouth. He's taking it and he's running with it and he's running over them right now. All right, coming up at 5:38, we're going to switch gears a bit. Some new polling on crime in the Chicago mayor's race, which speaks to what I've long told you. It's a much more complicated issue, is crime, than you might think. Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. By the way, I'm looking at this AM 560 Final Four bracket standing.
Yeah.
Or bracket standing, now that we're at the Final Four, I guess is maybe a better way to put it. But anyway, you guys are all done.
I'm out. I was out after the first round. Well, I know, had Arizona playing Iowa.
Yeah. Talk about picking with your heart.
You think, Dan?
And no,
bleeding
no Georgia,
heart Republican. Yes.
No Georgia Tech to select.
Yeah, I know. They didn't even make the NIT. So.
But from the standings, you guys are all maxed out because you have no Final Four teams left. So I can do no worse than tie, and all I need is one, either Arizona, I mean, either San Diego State or Miami to win a Final Four game, and then it's over.
Yeah. Okay. You won. Congratulations.
I didn't. If they both lose, well, then I tie. I tie Jacob the Engineer, and I don't like ties. So
it's like soccer. Anyway. That's why you don't like it.
Exactly. But anyway, yeah. So I like San Diego State and both San Diego State and Miami and their respective matchups. The Florida Atlantic story is great, but I think San Diego State's defense is going to shut down their three-point shooting. Anyway, I digress. Just wanted to make that clear. I know people are very, very interested in what's happening in our pool here
they
at the
are.
Station.
Oh, yeah. What do you win, by the way? Just bragging rights?
Bragging rights.
Because I don't remember putting any cash in a pot.
No, that would be illegal.
Oh, you that's right.
You have to do that through DraftKings. Yeah.
Which, by the way, high schoolers are all in. Gambling is going to be the biggest problem in 10 years. I'm telling you, all the kids right now are gambling.
He who gambles lives in shambles, except me.
Do I have to bring up Cleveland?
And the bringing down the house guys. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So some new polling in the mayor's race through the lens of crime. And it turns, and you would think, based on some of the initial numbers that are being provided by the Manhattan Institute, that's who did this poll, our friends Rafael Mangual and company at the Manhattan Institute. You'd think, based on some of the numbers you're going to hear initially, well, that this is a slam dunk for Vallis then. But crime is more complicated. There are multiple variables and subordinate issues that influence people's vote beyond just the binary of who's the law enforcement guy and who's the anti-law enforcement guy. If it was that simple, and if Vallis had done, and maybe he has done an effective job of making it that simple, boiling it down to law enforcement Vallis, the lack of law enforcement Johnson, then he would win. Manhattan Institute survey of Chicago voters finds 54% of all Chicago voters, including 51% of black voters, cite crime and public safety as the most important issue. Clear majorities also feel the city is unsafe and that crime is on the rise. 57% the city is unsafe. 78% crime is on the rise because they're seeing spikes everywhere, right? In their neighborhood, most importantly. So if it's happening in my neighborhood, it must be on the rise. And these numbers also speak to why Lightfoot got thrown out on her ass. The poll also shows voters overwhelmingly disapprove of Kim Fox. She's upside down by 27 points.
Good. Because a vote for Brandon Johnson is a vote for Kim Fox.
Yeah, nice try.
Well, he supports her. He thinks she's doing a wonderful job, Dan.
I understand, but I'm just saying those bang shots usually don't work. 71% of voters want the city to hire more police, with nearly half saying the city should hire a lot more police. Clear majorities believe punishments for criminals are too lenient, 55%. And favor stronger punishments for repeat offenders, 79%. So you listen to all those numbers, you say, well, wow, Chicago's not as lost as I thought. there are majorities that understand the city is unsafe, that more policing is at least part of the answer and an important part of the answer, sort of the first part of the answer, and then there are all sorts of subparts. But as Manguel writes in City Journal, all this would seem to suggest a clear and relatively easy path to victory for Vallis. And yet the poll also highlights why, despite the top line results and recent crime trends, the outcome of the mayoral election is far from certain. For example, a plurality of Chicago voters support the Safety Act.
Really?
44%.
40 what?
I mean, so again, here we go. People don't connect the dots. Now, the Safety Act hasn't been implemented, but it de facto has in Cook County, which includes Chicago. And yet they bought the rhetoric from, not from the 102 prosecutors, county prosecutors that opposed it, not from all the sheriffs. They bought the rhetoric from who? From Pritzker and all the leftists, including the legislative sponsors of the Safety Act, were Chicago Democrats. 44% did. That makes it pretty close. Majority support the recent restrictions placed on the ability of Chicago police to engage in foot pursuits that was instituted after the shooting of Adam Toledo. 53% support restricting police to engage in foot pursuits.
Okay.
So more police. I want more police. I want a lot more police.
But
except they can't chase anybody.
Yeah. That makes a heck of a lot of sense.
So it's just those, you know, so you see like a top line and people know what the answer is because it's just so commonsensical. Of course we need law enforcement. Of course the punishments, because I've read the stories and I've seen people, maybe in my neighborhood, I've seen the same scumbag out over and over again after he's committed crimes, and I know the crimes he's committed. So of course we need to impose punishment for repeat offenders and stiffer punishments for said offenders. So, of course, I believe that. But, you know, I'm still a Democrat, and the Democrats in public office saying you got to support the Safety Act. Democrats in public office saying police are part of the problem, can't have foot pursuits. If we didn't have foot pursuits, Adam Toledo would still be alive today. And so they buy. So I'm pro-law enforcement. I'm pro my own public safety, but I'm kind of anti-law enforcement, too. You know, sometimes I feel like I'm nuts, and sometimes I don't. So this is trying to crawl into the mind of these, of some of these Chicago voters. And as Manguel points out, perhaps the voters who will decide the race, he again citing his piece, perhaps most notable is the finding that while the poll reports a 5-point lead for Vallis among voters who've decided whom they'll support, about 1 in 6, that's 17%, remain undecided. Those undecideds are more likely to be black, female, young, and from the city's south side, all groups among whom Johnson enjoys advantages, like a 3-to-1 advantage, and who seem more skeptical of Alice's law and order message. Indeed, undecided voters express more support for a social spending approach to the crime problem than they did for one focused on enforcement. And thus, you have a race that's a toss-up. It was always going to be. I don't know who thought this was going to be a walk in the park for Vallis, people that don't understand the landscape. And it looks, as we're here 8 days out, week from tomorrow, to be exactly that based on some of what the Manhattan Institute's poll finds. And not just the head-to-head, but the underlying mentality that it illustrates, particularly among those undecideds.
312-642-5600. Excuse me, turnkey.pro answer line 64636, type in DA, and then a quick comment. Guess who was in town yesterday supporting Brandon Johnson?
Al Sharpton, of course.
Yeah.
Reverend Al.
Al, you know, Reverend Al. Uh-huh.
Nobody brings the city together like Al Sharpton.
April 4th, that we are the children of those that shed blood to give us the right to vote.
Yeah, right.
So glad that it was bad audio.
He
just basically said the whole world and the whole country is watching Chicago right now.
I think we're familiar with what Al Sharpton has to say. Was Tawana Brawley with him?
Oh. Dick Durbin coming forward to support Paul Vallis. He explains why.
I thought about it long and hard. You know, I respect both candidates in the race. And I thought, and quite honestly, I know Paul Vallis so well. I know him personally, I know his family, I know his values, and I know his amazing intellect. I have worked with this man over the years.
Think that's going to move the needle at all, Dan?
Indivisible Chicago Alliance, which is a group of Leninists, tweeted about that endorsement. We're appalled Senator Durbin has endorsed a candidate with ties to right-wing extremists like Awake Illinois, Jeannie Ives, Dan Proft, and John Catanzara. Yeah. Yeah. So that's what's coming down to. This all neutralizes. This is all just, meat for the base here. This doesn't do anything. I mean, although, gosh, I don't know. I mean, being in the same camp with Dick Durbin should make some center-right voters feel uncomfortable, but I understand this is a binary choice and not much of one, I suppose.
Well, and I don't know if you saw what's happening on the south side. On Stony Island from 61st Street to 83rd, somebody put up Vallis signs. It says Vallis for mayor, and then they put MAGA 2024, like a Trump logo, MAGA 2024 sticker on all of the... Can you legally take those down, or would that be considered a crime?
No, you can't legally. On private property? No, because private property is private property.
Well, it's in the median on the street, but I'm just saying. I mean, they're everywhere.
If it's in the parkway, if it's on public property, they should be taken down by public works. But if it's on private property, no. But, you know, I mean, sign wars. Oh, my gosh. Oh, there's misdirection plays going on. We've never seen this before.
Well, if they're tying Vallis to Trump, I don't like it.
Well, obviously, I understand why you don't like it.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I've never seen people doctor up. And I wish I could tweet it out, but I don't have Twitter. The sign, I mean, it's professionally made. It's really nice. It's not like they took the Vallis for mayor ones and put a sticker on it. They made these.
I've never gone through a campaign cycle in Illinois or Chicago where I haven't seen that.
Okay. I've never seen it before.
Yeah, I know. Every election cycle is sui generis for Illinois and Chicago voters, which is why we have the worst governed city in America and the worst governed state in American history, as I'm wont to say. Everything is new.
Why the Durbin endorsement is important?
I think it's going to help just dispel this myth that I'm not a lifelong Democrat.
Yeah. He's really a Democrat now. No, he's always been a Democrat. I don't even know why he said that.
Okay. This whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if Vallis wins, it will be in spite of himself. He is an awful candidate, and his campaign is completely tone deaf. He has run completely the wrong campaign. And so if he, by some act of God or fit of common sense where people say, people of the left, because that's who's going to decide this, particularly minorities and particularly some of those black voters that are undecided that were captured in the Manhattan Institute poll. It will be because people did boil this down and say, not owing much to Paul Vallis, but they boiled it down, basically said, look, CTU, Brandon Johnson, this rhetoric, it's just too much too fast right now in Chicago. If he wins, it will be because people made that decision on their own in spite of.
Okay.
Which is, I don't think it's going to happen, not to the numbers that Vallis needs, because I think identitarianism is too ingrained already in this electorate. But I'm just saying, if it does, this is going to be the expectation. People say, well, you're just hedging because if Vallis wins, then you'll be wrong. Whatever. Fine. You know, call in next Wednesday if Paul Vallis wins and have your fun. And then I'll ask you the question I'm always want to ask, like I did after the November election. What do you think you won with Pritzker's reelection? I just want to understand what your vision is, what you think you won. Not Darren Bailey. And then people say, not Brandon Johnson. Great. You know, defeating abstractions doesn't do much to improve your quality of life.
All you're saying if Paul Vallis wins, that is a win for the city.
That's another abstraction.
There's not going to be hotel tax, so more people are going to be able to keep their jobs. He is going to hire more police officers rather than social workers. He is going to bring beat police officers back, and he's going to work on the budget.
Right.
He's an adult compared to what's in the office right now.
I love these phrases. He's going to work on the budget. What does that even mean?
He's going to have a budget. He's a number cruncher. He's a nerdy guy.
We have budgets now.
Yeah, they're not doing so well.
Okay. So back to my point. abstractions. It's not going to be worse. It's not going to be the descent into the abyss that I predicted it would be if the candidate I'm not supporting won. That's what people are going to say, because that's what they always say. Fine. Great. Go ahead. Have your celebration. Then talk to me in 6 months and talk to me in a year and tell me how your life has been so much changed for the better.
Okay, I will. And I took Peyton and Eli to vote, to register to vote. And they're first-time voters, so everybody was cheering. We were at Wells Park. And then Eli, after he sticks the ballot into the box, says, "All right, Mom, where's my $60? I'm like, "Honey, you don't see... What, no, you're..." And I pass it off as, you know, he was just kidding around. Which he was just kidding around. A lot of people are voting early, by the way, because no one's going to be here next week because it's spring break for CPS. So,
Glenn in Oak Brook.
Yeah, good morning. The crime issue in Chicago is not going to be solved by either mayor, by either person running for mayor, because you have Kim Fox, who won't prosecute, Tony Preckwinkle that supports Kim Fox, and Tim Evans, who I'm not sure what he does. So until the management establishment changes their philosophy, crime will continue.
Thanks for the call, Glenn. George in Naperville.
Dallas needs to channel Bernie Epstein. Stop radical socialism before it's too late.
Uh-huh. And how did Bernie Epstein do? Thanks for the call, George. Remembering back to Mayor Bernie Epstein? Oh, wait, that didn't happen. Roger, Southside.
Hi, folks. Yeah, what you're stating on 5 minutes ago, Dan, we live in the only state that their elected officials want to take things backward, but they want the other side to come up short of telling them exactly what their behavior and characteristics are. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, here you have Animal Farm right now.
Okay.
But nobody in, at least in Chicago, Illinois, has the guts to say it. You know, it's kind of like the people who want, they want safety, but they're against you drug testing them randomly for work.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Right, exactly. So, I mean, not to say that example, but the point is, this is an electorate that is not good at connecting dots. This is an electorate that is not good at assessing opportunity cost. This is an electorate that does not make cause and effect connections. So this is an electorate that is wants to elevate somebody like Brandon Johnson, which is what I've said from, well, the outset, or at least a few weeks before the primary campaign. And I still think Brandon Johnson wins a close race. I think I said 52-48 on February 28th, February 29th, March 1st. We didn't have a leap year. I'll stick with that. It's possible. It's possible.
But it could have been 52-48 the other way, Vallis.
Well, of course, we only predict things we want to see happen.
Exactly.
But
just like my Iowa Hawkeyes.
But it would have been, it would have been so much different had Vallis run the kind of campaign that we described here, instead of trying to do a cheap facsimile of an identitarian leftist. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy talked about Chicago mayor's race a bit at the end of last hour.
Yes.
Let's incorporate the rest of Chicagoland and talk a little bit about municipal races, with particular emphasis on school boards in the suburbs, as we've been doing for the last couple of weeks. You want to profile a particular candidate or solicit information about candidates in your school district? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. One thing, and I will post this stuff on Twitter in a bit, but one thing to note here, and this is useful information, although these races are ostensibly nonpartisan, of course, they're partisan. And so understanding who the Democrat socialists are and who the center-right candidates, quote-unquote Republicans, are. And just to give you a little sense of the balance of power, how teachers' union, leftist-dominated, the suburbs have become, as if it isn't obvious by the representation in the General Assembly and Congress, but even at the municipal level, even in places you think are still right-leaning. Palatine Schaumburg Township, 211. The current split is 4-3 Democrat. Four seats are up. Four incumbents are running. Eight Democrats overall are running. Four Republicans. Barrington, 220.
This is going to be a hotly contested race.
Right now, Barrington, 220 is 4-3 Democrat. Barrington. There are seven candidates running, three Dems, four GOP, three seats up. Elk Grove Village, 6-1 Democrat.
I mean, it used to, 13 years ago, this place was a Republican bastion.
Four Dems running, two Republicans for three seats. Republicans not even fielding enough candidates for all the available seats, which you see a lot, by the way.
Right. Well, they gave up here.
Arlington Heights, 214.
My town.
4-3 Democrat. Four Republicans running there, one Democrat.
How many seats are up?
Three seats up, okay. Two incumbents running. So they're adding one, trying to add one Democrat, and Republicans have four candidates running for the three open seats. Arlington School District 25, by contrast, one of the few, 5-2 Republican.
That's my sister's district, okay. Five,
three seats up, three Dems, two GOP running. Two incumbents running.
Okay.
Des Plaines, 7-0 Democrat. Five Democrats running for three seats, zero Republicans. Palatine, 15. 4-2-1 Democrat. Three Dems running, two GOP running for three seats. Mount Prospect School District 57. Is that yours?
Yep, that's me.
7-0 Democrat.
Wow. Any Republicans running?
One Republican running for three seats. Good luck. Park Ridge Niles, 64. 4-3 Republican. Four seats up. Six Democrats running. Two Republicans. Two incumbents. And that's Northwest Suburban Cook. You want to go North Shore? I mean, just quickly, North Shore. Niles, 219, 7-0 Democrat. Niles, 71, 7-0 Democrat. New Trier, 203, 7-0 Democrat. Northfield, 225, 6-1 Democrat. Glenview, 34, 6-1 Democrat. Northbrook Glenview District 30, 5-1-1 Democrat. Evanston, 202, of course, 7-0 Democrat. West Northfield, 6-0-1 Democrat. That's School District 31. Winnetka School District 36, 3-2-2 Democrat. Evanston Skokie, 65, of course, 7-0 Democrat. Skokie Fairview, 72, 7-0 Democrat. But you're going to take the schools back, right? Can't figure out what's going on, right? West Cook, Lyons Township, 204, 7-0 Democrat. LaGrange, 102, 7-0 Democrat. Riverside Brookfield, 208, 6-1 Democrat. River Forest, 90, 7-0 Democrat. Franklin Park, 84, 6-0-1 Republican. Republican, Franklin Park. Manheim School District, 83, 4-1-2 Democrat. Elmwood Park, Franklin Park, 6-0-1 Republican. Elmwood Park, 5-2 Republican. Couple of little out bastions there, little islands in the West Cook sea of leftism. Westchester, 4-2-1 Democrat. Oak Park River Forest, 200, of course, 7-0 Democrat. Morton, 201, 4-3 Democrat. Berwyn, 100, 7-0 Democrat. Berwyn, 98, 7-0 Democrat. There's your quick perusal of Northwest Cook, the North Shore, and West Central Cook County. Any questions about the schools, about the reelection of Kim Fox, about the dominance of Tony Preckwinkle, about what's happening in Chicago and suburban Cook County, about the exodus from Chicago and suburban Cook County of people, businesses, people with businesses. Any questions? Any questions with the quality of education that's being provided, the quality of students these schools are turning out, including on the North Shore? I mentioned Winnetka, Wilmette, all those Tony suburbs on the North Shore. Any questions? Because this is where it starts. And they figured that out a long time ago while we were asleep at the switch. While we were saying things like you just heard Amy saying. 13 years ago, that was something. Oh, yeah, yeah, 13 years ago was something different. And now it's some. Yeah, now it's not what it was 13 years ago. Uh-huh. Karen and Beecher, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Oh, good morning, my darlings. I have a recommendation down here in Beecher 200U. And strong Republican conservative candidates would be Stacy Mazurek, Todd Gregory, Susan Zawinski, and Melanie Brennenstahl. And I know somebody gave you a text on Friday, and we share three out of the four. And I'm recommending Stacy because I've worked with her for over 20 years on various campaigns with Dan. You and I have a shared friend, Judy O'Gala. So I've worked with her for over 20 years. And her husband, Ron, he was my school board husband when I also served on the school board. But 4 years ago, I was not reelected to the school board because people did not appreciate my fiscal conservative tactics. When I left the school board in 4 years ago, we had a solid ship. And here in Beecher, they elected somebody whose husband's construction union got involved in the campaign for school board. Teeny tiny Beecher, a big construction company got involved, and there were posters and signs. And right away, of course, you know, when unions get involved, payback. And so the paras, the secretaries, the nurses, everybody but the custodians were unionized. And then, so now we're like,
yeah, right.
I think 8 million in the hole.
Yeah, right.
And we have a new referendum.
Thanks for the call, Karen. Appreciate it. Laura, Rolling Meadows, 214.
Hey, I'm actually now in Chesterton, Indiana. Praise God.
There you go.
For you.
Yeah.
Hi, Laura.
214. I want to correct the record here. Dan, you mentioned that some of our current board members are Republicans. They may be, but they sure don't act like it.
Yeah.
Board has been a unified group of seven individuals operating as a slate since the late 90s. We have board members that were elected in the 90s. They are not Republicans. There's no discussion on any single issue. It is a straight 7-0 vote, no matter what comes to the board. There's never a dissenting vote. So anyway, for my friends in the Northwest suburbs, please get out and vote. You want to vote for Elizabeth Bauer, Misa Edwardson. We can't flip this board. But if we could have one or two dissenting voices on it to at least have some conversation and discussion, it would make all the difference in the world.
There you go. Well, who is the second name? Because we've been saying Elizabeth Bauer for 214. And right. Even though there's three seats up, she's the only one I could recommend. Who is the other one?
Misa Edwardson.
Misa Edwardson.
Okay.
Yep. And this is Liz's second shot at it. Mm-hmm. And I wish both of these ladies the best of luck. As I said, we just need some conversation with this board.
Yeah, right. Thanks for the call, Laura. The group think that takes over. Right. Yeah, hey, you know, let's just get it all settled before the board meeting so there's no public disagreement. We don't want any acrimony here. We want to just share a brain and, you know, go in the direction of the cultural zeitgeist, which is left, particularly here. And, you know, we may have some modest disagreements about the pace at which we're going to go left, but let's just hash it out behind closed doors.
Yeah. And then, you know, they have these meetings and act like they don't even act like they care what people are saying anymore. They used to. They used to be good actors. Like, mm-hmm, I hear your concerns. They already made up their mind before the meeting begins.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Thank you for your comments.
Yeah.
Thank
Next.
You for your comments.
Next. No, thank people are crying. Comments. Next. Remember that? When all those school board, when parents are crying like, please, I want my kids back in school and my sons or daughters not doing well. Next.
Thank you for your comments.
Time's up. Time is up. Whatever happened to Mr. Traub?
Officer, remove this parent. Right. She spoke for 3 minutes and 5 seconds. Nancy in Northbrook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Speaking of Northbrook.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Yeah. You know, I looked at the Wirepoint study last week, and there was nothing about Northbrook or Glenview on there. Do you have any idea what the numbers look like from, like, 225 or 27 or 28? Wirepoint.
If it wasn't a Wirepoint study, I don't have it offhand. We could look that up, obviously. I think they went with the top 20 school districts by population, but I don't know. But I know Northbrook Glenview. What did I say? Northbrook Glenview School District 30, 511 Democrat. There are no Republicans running.
Oh my God.
Glenview 34.
Yeah, no surprise.
6-1 Democrat, one Republican running.
A leftist that I know posted three people for 225, which my husband and I said, okay, we're not voting for them. It was Sandra Mullenbeck, Sydney, Skip Shine, and Marcelo Steinberg. So those are three people we will not vote for.
Yeah, well, so here's...
Are there any Republicans running?
Yes, it's 6-1 Democrat. Yeah. There are three seats up, and there are two Republicans, and... Let me get you that one, because I know we have two names for 225. So, you know, to the extent that people are interested, we want to help. To the extent you're not, then that's fine, too. And so we'll go. Thanks for the call, Nancy. Let me get those two here while looking at it. We need the Jeopardy music here. 225. Lots of school districts. Lots.
George is filling in for Justin. Where's our Jeopardy music? He doesn't have it.
How about a rim shot?
What it rains it pour. I can come.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I have from Northfield Township District 34, which is close, but that's. So I have so on the North Shore, I've got New Trier and I've got Northfield District 34. That's what I got for you right now. New Trier is Blanca Zaragoza Kaufman, Bernie Hosfeld, Jennifer Yeo, Y-E-O. So Zaragoza Kaufman, Hosfeld, and Yeo, that's New Trier Township, the high school district.
Okay.
Northfield Township District 34, I've got Paul Kelly and Jim Gelderman. Kelly and Gelderman for District 34. I don't see a 225.
That's where Joel Traub is from. Remember, he cursed it, the maskless man, and told him to put it, you know.
I do remember that. By the
that
way,
repulsive.
Speaking of which, there's some, in addition to school board, of course, there's mayor and village council races, too. And I just want to direct your attention to this one. Sort of the underlying issue, which is I think a real estate development issue, is immaterial. The treatment is what's material. This is in Palos Park. Sleepy, leafy Palos Park. A woman named Ronette McCarthy is running for mayor. And she came to a Palos Park Village Council meeting to address the Palos Park Village Council.
This is good. We saw this.
And this is how she and other audience members who are Palos Park residents...
Who pay taxes in Palos Park.
...were treated by a village councilman named Daryl Reed, who's apparently his division is to be the commissioner for public works. Dale Reed, speaking to Renette McCarthy, who's a candidate for mayor, and to Palos Park residents who share Renette McCarthy's position, not Mr. Reed's.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Thank you, all of you, for coming. I'm Renette McCarthy. I live at 9002 West 121st Street. Mr. Reed, did I say something wrong? There's just been a number of times, I have to say, I heard what John said earlier, and then the first thing I come up and introduce myself, and Mr. Reed's shaking his head. I don't know what he meant by that. Hopefully it wasn't anything directed at me.
Dollars in front of this. He's dangled. I'm sorry, Mr. Polk, was that funny?
There are children in the audience that clearly don't know how to behave themselves.
What?
I would ask that, baby, you put your big boy and big girl on and just shut the hell up talking. Whoa. That would be a good start. And just shut the hell up while we're talking. And then privilege. When a black man makes a facial expression and someone has the audacity in a public forum to ask him to explain himself. No. No. It ain't that kind of party, people. It's not. And the children are still talking out of turn. When you don't have anything important to say, then you make noise.
Is he okay? Is there something wrong with him?
Yeah, there's something wrong with him. He's a race hustler. That's what's wrong with him. And that's on the Palos Park Village Ward. Palos Park. Wealthy, little, suburban, leafy, enclave, southwest side. And there's a challenger to the mayor and apparently to the local political culture there. You heard her name, Renette McCarthy. So there are some people putting themselves forward to challenge what has been inculcated in the suburbs and most of the rest of the state, which is identitarian madness. And it takes a lot of different forms. It takes the form in curriculum. It takes the form in how people who disagree are treated at board meetings. And there are innumerable examples of that during COVID. And they persist to this day. It could be something as pedestrian as a disagreement over a real estate development. And you go right to the race card. So, I mean, these are the kind of communities you want to live in, or you just want to bury your head in the sand and not pay attention. I guess if your kids are out of school and you don't mind usurious property taxes, you can sort of blithely walk by all of this mess. But at least some should be encouraged in some locales that some are stepping up to put in the fight. Lou on the southwest side.
Yeah, thanks for my call, taking my call, Dan and Amy. I got District 86, Andrew Catton, C-A-T-T-O-N, Catherine Greenspoon, and Kay Gallo, but there's nobody better than her. In Darien, District 61, Travis Myers, and the Park District in Darien, Frank Norini, Indian Trails Library Trustee, Stacy Palmezzo, Victoria Sinaro, Marion Popactic, Donald Damon, and in the College of DuPage, District 502, Trustee Christine Fenn, F-E-N-N-E, Andrew Mano, and in Downers Grove, Bob Bartnett, and Village Council, Martin Tully, Jim DeVette, Denise McCann, Diane Cox, Barb Allen, and Chris Erickson. Thank you.
All right. Hey, Lou. Email those to me, will you? I mean, some of those names we mentioned, some of them we haven't. Dan at danprof.com. Just shoot me an email with those names so that we can incorporate them.
Okay.
Thanks for the call, Lou.
Thank you so much. I love our listeners.
Angelo Sellis in Addison also sent me some names here. He's a guy I trust. Addison Township of Concerned Citizens candidates. District 88, Gail Gallivan. That's District 88. Addison Public Library. Pudelec, Rebeletti, and Neary. Those four. District 88, Gail Gallivan, Addison Public Library, Pudelec, Rebeletti, Neary. Yeah. So we'll just keep, talking about them. But also, again, later today, I'll post some of what you heard, the distribution of Republican versus Dems in these districts, the seats up, the incumbents running, Republicans versus Democrats running, and then as many names as we can call together and be confident of, we'll post those so that you can just pick them up and share them how you see fit. All right, Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. One postscript on our discussion of school boards in Chicagoland. Got an update in for Lamont 210. We had just been recommending McManus. McManus, Staubus, Buccina, B-U-C-Z-Y-N-A. McManus, Staubus, Buccina, Benson. The final four. McManus, Staubus, Buccina, Benson in Lamont 210. And again, try and post comprehensive lists for shareable purposes a little bit later on this morning. All right. Speaking of putting in the fight, we've had a number of these instances where you've had a parent speak up at a school board meeting. Often it's just a off-the-cuff riff that comes from a passionate place, and an intelligent one too. Some great diatribes at school board meetings that get people energized, and it's good. You need to stand up to this and speak on the substance of it. And by this, I mean identitarianism in all its noxious forms. Well, a mom and an attorney in Minnesota, Coffee Monska, testified before a Minnesota State House committee against the ethnic studies legislation. Legislation like we feature here in Illinois in all the schools. And here's what counselor and mom Monska had to say. Take a listen.
My name is Coffee Monska. I'm an attorney, wife, and mom to three boys, two of which are in high school. This bill requires that schools teach ethnic studies starting in kindergarten, and I am against this. You might ask, why in the world would a black person speak against ethnic studies? Because not everything that sounds good is good. The definition of ethnic studies right there in the statute says that there is a connection between a person's race and their stratification. The bill tells kids of color that they are stuck in a caste system based on their race. It also tells kids, and I quote, that institutions chronically favor white people and disadvantage people of color. I'm sick of everyone denying the enormous progress we've made in this country, acting like it's 1930. We used to have a race-based system. We got rid of it, and now you're all trying to bring it back. This curriculum will not help kids of color succeed. All it does is remove any reason to try. And I repeat that, it removes any reason to try. And this is not some theoretical crap. This stuff happens. These messages are very harmful. Just last month in my high schooler's band class, the teacher took 20 minutes at the beginning of class to talk about anti-racism. He told the kids to look around. And then he said the black boys in the school would likely not live to retirement because of racism and the police. Another furious kid of color recorded this conversation, and so I was able to hear it for myself with my own ears. If this law is passed, teaching this hopelessness to kids of color will be mandated starting in kindergarten. And I can see why you white proponents of this bill might support it. It's not your kids being told that they can't succeed, and you get to shed some of your white guilt in the process. But you legislators of color, how can you? You made it despite the invisible boogeyman of systematic racism. You were voted in by a majority of white people. You hold some of the most powerful positions in this state. Yet you want to tell my kids and other kids of color that they can't succeed? It's shameful. It's terrible. I ask that you please vote against this bill. Thank you for this opportunity.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. It's one of my favorite arguments against this poison of CRT and identitarianism generally. Oh, I understand. So these oppressed kids who are oppressed just because they're black or brown, they can't make it. But you did. How'd you do it? Are you special? Are you more special, more talented than my kids, than my friends? You can make it in this mixed up white supremacist world, but they can't. Explain. Don't you love it? Especially coming from an attorney. You can tell she's an attorney. Very logical, very reasoned, very right, right down the line. Here's what you're saying. Here are the implications. And go pound sand. You're not telling that to my kids. Can you imagine? Can you imagine a band director talking to the black kids in the band and telling them they're not going to live to 35 because of police and structural racism? Can you imagine that? Well, you don't have to imagine it. It's happening.
Right. They tell people that. They tell kids that. As if there's no hope. I thought we were supposed to give them hope. But I like this woman because she's pragmatic. She's not emotional. And she gets her point across.
Ian Rowe, our friend over at 1776 Unites, who runs charter schools in the Bronx. The road to excellence for the rising generation of black students really has to be paved by strong black parents like Kofi Monska, who you just heard from, who rejected the poisonous oppressor-oppressed narrative that victimizes children of all races. Yes, of all races, exactly. It's not just about black. It's about black, white, oppressor, oppressed, privileged, unprivileged. And I would just add to what Ian Rowe said. I would incorporate it, agree with it, but also add that you honkies out there, particularly those who live in wealthy enclaves where this dreck is incubated and who know better, you have a duty to end your silence and echo what this Minnesota mom just said. You have a duty to do that if you want to consider yourself a civilized person. If you want to just be another sentimental barbarian in Naperville or River Forest or Wilmette, well, go ahead. But those who know better should also be identifying you as a sentimental barbarian. It's not just enough to say what she said. That's a start. It is also to identify those who are completely bought into the poison, who are propagating this poison, who are barbarians in our midst. Not at the gate, inside the gate. When is it enough already with this? And if the opportunity to participate in elections where you have a glide path to expressing yourself doesn't motivate you, well, not only then, I don't know what to tell you, but honestly, what the hell is your problem? All you have to do is move some pass cards. All you have to do is share some names within your social circles. All you have to do is take this video of this mom in Minnesota and share that and say, which part of that do you disagree with? What part of what she said doesn't make sense to you? Do you know better for her children than she does? Look at what this legislation actually says. Look at, and of course you're going to have to spoon feed. So get it. Look at what this says, just like the attorney, Ms. Monska did. This is what it actually says. This is what it means. This is the associated curriculum. So which part of that do you want to endorse? all this, again, appeal to sort of amorphous goods like anti-racism. And what's exactly what she said? What sounds good isn't always good. Your intentions may be good and they may pave the road to hell. You need to slap some people out of it intellectually. Or don't complain when the community you live in disintegrates around you. In every way, shape, and form. And I don't just mean from a public safety perspective. John in Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, maybe I'm just missing something, but if there's so much systemic racism, everything's racism, everybody's being held back because of their race, which is illegal, by the way, why aren't there more lawsuits that we could kind of hold our, you know, our feet to the fire on? I just don't get it.
Wait, lawsuits? What are you talking about there? Well, who needs lawsuits when you've got reparations committees? Who needs a lawsuit in San Francisco when it's going to be $5 million lump sum payment, $100,000 for 250 years, buy a house for a dollar?
All debts forgiven, too.
And that, too.
So if and then you layer on another credit card bill. If you haven't paid your bills, they'll pay it for you.
Layer on another almost $250,000 from the state of California. Or the city of Evanston, a $20,000 housing. I mean, what do you need to sue anybody for? What do you need to endure the expense and the consternation of going through courts of law when you can just do it through task forces and Marxist legislators? Isn't that easier? That's the path of least resistance. Seems to be working pretty well. New York City Teachers Union sponsoring a virtual workshop on fighting back against the, quote, harmful effects of whiteness in our lives. New York City Teachers Union, largest school district in the country.
Stop.
Holding the weight of whiteness, that's today, 4 to 6 p.m.
4 to 6 p.m.?
Will be hosted by a Queens-based psychotherapy consultant. Of course, a die devotee and cult leader, Erica Sandoval. UFT, United Federation of Teachers, Teachers Union, New York City, who are licensed mental health professionals, can earn 2 hours of credit toward their counseling, toward their continuing ed, 2 hours of continuing ed credit that can ultimately boost their salary. Uh-huh. We'll focus on key cultural themes related to the Latinx-y communities, internalized racism, privilege, white identity. Participants will leave the workshop with a better understanding of how to center ourselves as a form of resistance against the harmful effects of whiteness in our lives, the organizations we work for or direct, and the communities in which we serve. And so
it'll be, you know, a few weeks before the CTU does it as well. I'm sure they're waiting until after the election.
Oh, why wait? You think they
all hands on deck to get people out to vote between? You know,
well, yeah, but I mean, but it's not because they have any concern that this is politically sensitive. They don't anticipate any pushback, and they won't get any.
No.
Nicholas and Lyle.
Hello.
Hey, Nicholas.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me today. I just want to make a quick comment. You know, we agree with you and, you know, Republicans and everything. And you made a comment earlier about, you know, we can't blame anything unless we go out there and fight and vote. But I think most of America, at least in people that I know, have kind of understood that this is kind of like an ant to an elephant. We're getting crushed by all this politics stuff. They got the money. They got the power. I mean, when are we going to turn back to God and just be like, okay, you know, I'm not taking part of this anymore. I'm not
Benedict
voting
option.
Anymore. I'm not. It's not an option to do that.
No, I said the Benedict option. The Benedict option is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Just like, okay, worry about our families. You know, not be separated from all this. You know, won't that make a statement when they're looking at the numbers and, wow, 50 million people didn't vote this year? 100 million people didn't vote this year? You know, what the heck is going on? Well, no one cares anymore. We want to care about our family and our friends and all the politics, the left and the right, both bought out. I mean, and I tell people, you know, you're that kooky conspiracy theorist that that George Bush talked about. No, you know what? I just realized it's both the same thing. I'd rather care about my nieces, my family, my friends, and I'm not going to take part in it anymore. I'm not going to vote. I'm just so sick of it, you know? And maybe that's really the answer. Get back to God, get back to our families, and just forget all this crap.
Thanks. But you have to vote if you're not part of the process. The government's trying to take control of your family. Don't you get it? I mean, isn't it abundantly clear? And these progressive white parents, I mean, can you imagine, again, if they were told that their kids couldn't succeed in class because of the color of their skin? No. I don't like when I hear people say they're not voting because that's,
the easy
way out.
With respect to the Benedict option, I mean, I'm not saying it's the easy way out, but I think that, I understand it. I really do. I would just say, I think you can turn back to God and care about your family and friends and also participate.
Yeah.
At some level. And I think that you're duty bound. I mean, turning back to God. So part of the calling is to stand athwart evil. And I don't want to necessarily put every race in biblical terms, but I mean, culturally, there is evil afoot. And I think you have to call it that, and I think you have to stand up against it. Because what are you doing when you teach your children to turn to God? What are you doing when you teach your children to be men and women of character? You're teaching them to put in the fight when they're of age to put in the fight. So I don't think you can just turn away. And by the way, I think, and I can understand, I know where this goes, sort of a second and third level, but let me just say it anyway. Because you stop participating doesn't mean they will leave you alone.
Right.
Because you just focus on being a pro-life advocate and teaching your son about the sanctity of human life, and you go pray outside at an abortion clinic in Philadelphia, doesn't mean that you won't be raided by SEAL Team 6 at your rural home in Pennsylvania. You know what I mean? So it's the old saw, just because you don't take an interest in politics doesn't mean politics won't take an interest in you. And it certainly has. And it's going to negatively impact your ability to just concern yourself with family and work and God. So I think you can be family or God and family focused and still participate in a meaningful way where you can in trying to ward off evil. And also, again, part of the charge, the intergenerational compact between you and your ancestors and you and your progeny. You're supposed to do what you can to leave this place better than how you found it. Are we doing that in Illinois? Andy on 88.
Dan and Amy, thank you. Good morning. I went to a wonderful summit over the weekend. I can only make it for Saturday. I had to actually work on Friday, so I had to miss Friday's episode. Wonderful summit. Great minds. A lot of the exact talking points that and concerns that are out here that you're discussing today, wonderful things came out of it. The most important is conservatives. It is not a religion. It is a religion. It's not a politic. That's probably something that young people have to grab a hold of, and there were plenty of young faces and young people in that summit as well that were holding on to it. And I think one of the problems is it takes energy from all of us, energy to continue these messages and bring them forward. That's the hard part. And it's up to individuals, as you say, in that religion to bring it forward. And that's the energy. And we have to do that. We have to do that to keep the liberal.
Thanks for the call, Andy. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer. of the morning, Dan and Amy. I'm old enough to remember the first two terms of the Joe Obama years when President Obama, back when Mr. 10% was just in second slot, drew a red line in Syria.
Oh, that's right.
Wagging his finger at Bashar al-Assad, looking for regime change there. Golly, whatever happened? Not much, apparently, because once it became clear that we weren't going to defend that red line, there was a return to the status quo in Syria. And the status quo includes what happened last week with Iranian-backed attacks on Americans, including a contractor that was killed. National Security Council spokeshuman John Kirby was on Face the Nation. I watch Margaret Brennan interview John Kirby. I do that punishment to myself so you don't have to.
Thank you.
Here's
it's very kind of you.
What John Kirby said about President Biden and his reaction to those attacks.
What has been happening in Syria with these attacks on U.S. forces there? We had this deadly attack on Thursday by these Iran-aligned groups, a U.S. retaliation, and then three other known attacks on U.S. positions. President Biden said he would act if U.S. troops were under fire. Is the U.S. going to retaliate?
We have acted with U.S. troops under fire. First of all, condolences. Our condolences to the family of the U.S. contractor, U.S. citizen who was killed. It's devastating news that no family wants to ever get, and we certainly grieve with them. And we're obviously hoping for a speedy recovery for those who are still suffering from the wounds. But this was a serious attack by these militant groups. And the president retaliated swiftly and boldly, significantly, to deal with that. You're right. There were some follow-up response.
At least three from
these militant groups. Not a lot of damage caused, although the one service member was injured. So we're going to see where this goes. But the president in Ottawa made it very clear that we're going to always act to defend our troops and our facilities. And here's what's not going to change, Margaret. The mission in ISIS is not going to change. We have under 1,000 troops in Syria that are going after that network, which is, while greatly diminished, still viable and still critical. So we're going to stay at that task.
For more on this, pleased to be joined by Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano of the Heritage Foundation. Jim, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Man, I wish I had my coffee first. There is nothing that I like about this. There is no way to put lipstick on this and have it look like anything other than a sow. First of all, the retaliation thing is just utter nonsense. These are militias that are backed by the Iranians. The Iranians will fight to the last militiaman. It could care less. So striking them as bold and strong is just nonsense. It's just plain whack-a-mole. So that in itself ought to be really disturbing, because what this administration very clearly said is, we're not going after the people that are responsible, which is the Iranians. And this comes just days after Ted Cruz just excoriated the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, saying, you guys are funding both sides of the Ukraine war. You're giving billions of dollars to the Ukrainians to fight the Russians. And you're giving all kinds of sanctions relief and workarounds to the Iranians to make money so they can support the Russians, because you want them to come back in an Iran deal. So very clearly this administration doesn't want to get tough on Iran. And so they're putting men and women in harm's way in little Alamos in the middle of Syria because they don't know what else to do. It's like a bad movie.
Is Iran still the leading state sponsor of terror in the world? Do they still hold that title?
They do, and under this administration, because they do this constant opening to Iran, trying to entice them back into an Iran deal, even as it is absolutely beyond a shadow of an argument by anybody on any side that argues that any Iran deal could prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. They continue that door open. And when you leave that door open, it allows Iranians to continue to do nasty stuff because they don't really care about the Iranian people. They care about funding all their proxies and their aggressive actions. And so, for example, even while there's a ceasefire in Yemen, the Iranians are funneling weapons into Houthis for the next phase of the war in Yemen. So it just doesn't end.
Mm. I was taken by this op-ed in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend, especially after Austin and Milley were before congressional committees talking their talk. This is from retired Major General Patrick Brady and a former congressman talking about essentially CRT and diversity, inclusion, equity in the military. This, you know, treating the military like we treat kindergarten classrooms in America, basically, these days. They write, the cultural shift, what's happening in the military, the cultural shift isn't obvious to those outside the military, in part because it isn't immediately measurable. The harm of this CRT die identitarian instruction, the harm becomes clear only when a unit is subjected to stress and performs less effectively, and then only if an observer is there and knows what to look for. Is that right? I mean, is that your understanding that there have already been sort of looking at sort of, I guess, ways to measure unit cohesion, thus effectiveness, and you're seeing this focus on being color conscious rather than color blind and being inclusive and worrying about people's pronouns and gender identities is demonstrably making our military less effective?
Yeah, I think the good analogy is it's like a cancer. You know, at some point it metastasizes and it becomes oh so apparent that you're sick and dying. But just a couple of weeks before, you kind of looked okay. So I think what they describe is really accurate. And it reminds me so much of what we experienced in the late 60s and early 1970s, when I was commissioned in the military, where we had the creeping careerism of Vietnam and so many officers just wanting to, you know, okay, whatever you want, just check a block. How many body counts do you want? Okay, write that down. What do you want me to tell you the success thing? Sure. And, you know, when I went into the military, I had a pledge for zero defects. In other words, I had signed a pledge that said I would make sure that nothing ever goes wrong. I mean, it was the height of hypocrisy. Of course, everybody knew that was signing these things. Yeah, this is ridiculous. Couldn't even come close to doing that. And of course, you know, Ronald Reagan came in the 80s and we cut all that stuff out. But I think this is a very, very serious problem. And it's, and people say, oh, you know, it's a couple $1 million. Oh, well, they spend billions. Who cares? But it is the time, the energy that you're doing this. And it's not just the military. It's the entire federal government. This administration is adding assessments to every single personnel review in every federal agency that says, how good are you at diversity, equity, inclusion? What fuzzy things are you doing to make sure that, you know, everybody, and you know what's going to, that is going to turn into complete corruption because there are no clear and open standards. And it literally will turn into bureaucrats promoting the bureaucrats they like because they'll give them glowing DEI assessments. And it's going to encourage people to adopt this behavior to treat people as if they're a statistic and some kind of, rather than just evaluate people on what they contribute to the success of the mission. So this is interesting. The success of the mission is now one of the least important attributes or things you're measured on if you are a federal employee.
Staying on the topic, authors who work at the Travis Air Force Base in California, along with a doctor who works at the Department of Pediatrics at Walter Reed, they penned a piece for the March edition of the American Journal of Public Health, these three authors who are doctors in the military, asserting the need for the military to train its healthcare providers in how to provide minors with experimental and irreversible sex change interventions, despite acknowledging that more than half of the physicians affiliated with the military in DOD, in DOD's healthcare system, report being unwilling to prescribe hormone therapy with or without training. They also suggest that children as young as 7 years old can provide informed consent as to their medical treatment, if they want, for example, what quote unquote gender affirming procedures or associated drugs. So they're arguing children as young as seven can make medical decisions for themselves. And then they're arguing that the entire military needs to be trained on how to provide experimental and irreversible sex change interventions DOD system wide. So that's also going on concurrent with this identitarian intellectual training.
Yeah, well, I'm not a doctor, but you know, people that have read the medical science and know very clearly that any kind of intervention before puberty is not scientifically valid. And what they're actually doing is they're encouraging gender dysphoria. To me, as a layman, I would say, well, this is just child abuse. This is you using science for a political purpose. There's a bigger problem here than just these Yahoo doctors. One is, you know, when you're in the military and you publish something publicly, that has to go through review. Why would the U.S. allow doctors to be publishing a journal article that is inconsistent with medical science? And
not to mention the law, for example, 7-year-olds being able to provide informed consent.
Exactly. But you know, one of the chief medical officers in the United States government, you know, supports this. This is, look, we all know, we all get the joke. This is a political agenda. Pushing transgenderism and gender dysphoria, these are political things that they think that somehow give them some kind of special virtue. But the practical effect of this is they're committing child abuse. I mean, people will look back at this, at these people, and they will put them in the same category as people that promoted eugenics in the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
They are not going to have statues made to them. They're going to be criminally purged from our memories as people that were maiming children because of a political ideology, not because of science. And people could say, well, no, that's not fair. We did it before. Eugenics is a perfect example of this. It's exactly the same. A bunch of people had a political agenda, and they made it sound like science, and everybody jumped on board until, one, people saw the horrific outcomes that it created, and two, they actually looked and said, well, gee, there's no science in the science.
I wanted to get your reaction to last week's testimony from the CEO of TikTok before House Committee. It probably didn't go as well as he had hoped it would go. But the larger point, though, too, is so you have all these state governments banning TikTok on state devices. You have the federal government banning TikTok on federal devices. So then whether you agree with it or not, then why so reticent to move into some sort of regulation of TikTok beyond the public sector?
Yeah. Well, I think we saw that in the number of Democrats that jumped to the defense of TikTok. And again, it is just blatantly political. It really wasn't any argument that, no, this is not a national security, this is not a problem. It's, hey, a bunch of kids are on TikTok. They like TikTok. I want to be the guy that defends TikTok. That makes me cool. So again, it's not funny. It's politics, right? It's putting politics in America. It's like, you know, eating sugar is bad for my child, but I want to be popular with my child, so I'll let them do that. And then we complain when our children are obese and our dental bills are through the roof.
I also want to ask you, there's a picture making the rounds of all the taxpayer equipment, $7 billion in abandoned equipment. Did we at least leave the keys in the car so that they could drive them?
They don't have keys in military vehicles.
Okay. Well, but I mean, that was just
no. It's not
obviously
funny.
It was a debacle, deadly withdrawal.
Tragic. Yeah.
Do we have what if they have that? What was that thing to lock your steering wheel?
The club. That's
the club.
They're handing that out, by the way, at the 19th district in Chicago to stop carjacking.
Yeah, they do that. They change the things. But anyway, here's the nuts. The ridiculous situation. They run away from Afghanistan, where we're taking no casualties. We're literally funding an army around us, right? And we're actually spending less in Afghanistan in a year than we used to spend under Obama in a week because of all the changes that Trump made. And we leave troops in the middle of Syria, tiny little Alamos, with literally no plan. This is who's running
you know, has their hand on the wheel of government.
And that's why we've restored our standing in the world international community, according to what I hear from the regime, right? This is how we've done it. We've got them just right where we want them, Jim. Lieutenant Colonel...
Go ahead. No, I absolutely don't know anybody that won't, in private, admit that this administration is a complete joke.
Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano, Heritage Foundation. Jim, thanks as always.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Trump was in Waco over the weekend, Waco, Texas. And, of course, that drew David Koresh snark from the D.C. press corps. Here's what he had to say about prosecutorial misconduct. He was talking about Manhattan D.A. Alvin Bragg. But, of course, given all the investigations he's endured and all the prosecutors across who have trod across his path, it's certainly not limited to Alvin Bragg, but the importance or the problem that is the prosecutorial misconduct. Here's Trump.
But this is really prosecutorial misconduct. That's what it's called. The innocence of people makes no difference whatsoever to these radical left maniacs. It is worse, actually, in my opinion. Hard to believe anything could be worse than this, but I think it's worse than ballot stuffing or media manipulation by the FBI working together with Twitter, Facebook, and the rest. Remember when that came out 4 weeks ago, that the FBI was working to make sure that nothing bad is said about Biden, but as much bad as possible is said about Trump.
And he went on to sort of summarize all the things that have gone on over the last 7 years and give this characterization of where America stands at present.
A third world banana republic. That's what we've become. Between our borders, our elections, and the weaponization of law enforcement, banana republic. That's what we have become. Let there be no doubt the injustices being done, not only to me, but to dozens across our country will not stand, and we're not going to stand for it. When this election is over, I will be the President of the United States. You will be vindicated and proud, and the thugs and criminals who are corrupting our justice system will be defeated, discredited, and totally disgraced. That's what's happening. That's what's happening.
Still rallying the faithful, to be sure, and by some indications, he's reaping the benefits electorally of this curious gambit by the Manhattan DA, but that hasn't stopped John Hinderaker from saying, yes, we Republicans should put Trump in the rearview mirror and move on to our party's serious candidates, of whom we have an abundance. Well, that is heretical in Trump world, to be sure, and John certainly knows. So let's talk to him about it. We're pleased to be joined by John Hinderaker. He is the president of the Center of the American Experiment, contributor to PowerlineBlog.com, PowerlineBlog.com. John, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, glad to be with you, Dan.
You don't want to let this play out a little bit? You're ready to move on? You don't want to follow him on Truth Social?
Well, you know, there's so much to be said, Dan. Let me just say a couple of quick things. And number one, there's this symbiotic relationship between Donald Trump and the Democrats. They want him constantly in the spotlight. They want him to be the face of the Republican Party. And, of course, that's fine with Trump. You know, he loves to be in the spotlight. And this whole situation with Alvin Bragg in New York and the indictment that may or may not happen is typical of that. So it turns out that the source for the assumption that we all had that Donald Trump was going to be indicted by Alvin Bragg last week, turns out the source was Donald Trump. You know, he claimed to have gotten leaks from the DA's office. Well, it turns out there has not been an indictment yet. And I think, Dan, I'm speculating here, but I think at least part of what's going on is that the Democrats are going back and forth about whether they want to indict Trump. On the one hand, their base wants nothing more than photographs of Trump in handcuffs. I mean, this would be, you know, they're salivating over that.
Trump wants nothing more than a picture of him in handcuffs, too.
Right, exactly. He wants to be the victim. You know, he wants always to be the story. And I think the reason why the Democrats are hesitating is because they know that this theory that Alvin Bragg has trumped up is frankly ridiculous. And in all probability, if Bragg indicts Trump, the ultimate result of that is that Trump beats it and Bragg looks stupid, and it's one more time when Trump has frustrated his enemies.
Yeah, but do you think it's going to happen? Or now that Bragg, you know, people are on to him and what he's doing, it might not happen. I mean, isn't this up to a grand jury?
Well, the prosecutor can do anything he wants with the grand jury.
Okay.
I mean, if he doesn't ask the grand jury to vote on an indictment, there's no indictment. Right. So it's not too late for the Democrats to pull back and say, oops, never mind. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen. You know, Bragg has gone a long way down this road, and to simply quit would be embarrassing to him. I guess my point is that there's a reason why there's been a lot of talk about an indictment, but so far, not an indictment.
I think the Democrats
are having second thoughts.
Well, there's, again, according to anonymous sources here reporting to the Post, but there's dissension within the ranks of Bragg's office from professional prosecutors who may also not like Trump, but don't want to be made a fool of and don't want the office they work at to look like a political hatchet shop rather than a law enforcement agency.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, Alvin Bragg is a politician who ran for office on a pledge, among other things, to go after Trump.
Yep.
But he's got professional lawyers working for him, you know, who don't want to bring a terrible case.
The question, though, about Trump's political viability, you know, the argument was made similarly in 2016 that the only guy who couldn't beat Hillary Clinton was Donald Trump. And then, you know, this is a difficult case to prove beyond reasonable doubt, but arguably you could say the only person who could have beat her in 2016 may have been Donald Trump because of the turnout that he generated and the composition of it. So I know there's people that are suggesting that DeSantis Trump 2024 is like Clinton Obama 2008. I'm not so sure that's the case. What's your take on that?
Well, I think Trump has done so much to damage himself. You know, he lost in 2020. You know, let's start with that. You know, he's 0-1 against Biden, and I don't think Trump has done anything in the last 2 years to strengthen his standing with the American people. And on the contrary, his judgment is so poor. He keeps doing things that just cement the negative images that so many have of him. And this case we're talking about is another great example of that, Dan. He goes on Truth Social and he posts a picture of himself wielding a baseball bat next to a picture of the DA, Alvin Bragg. And you know, that's just terrible. Terrible judgment. He deleted that picture. He realized, oops, wait a minute, that's a mistake.
Or maybe his attorney told him to.
Who knows, right? And he put a couple of long rants up on Truth Social, in one of which he's talking about potential death and destruction if Bragg indicts him. And of course, the Democrats jumped all over that. He's threatening violence. He's going to turn out the rioters like on January 6th. And they're bringing back, you know, memories of that incident and so forth. And you know, I know Trump has his fans, and there are a lot of them. And I think he did a lot of good things as president. And there's a lot of things I like about Donald Trump. But I think he has shown such poor self-destructive judgment so many times that I don't think he's electable in 2024.
I hear that argument. I mean, I'm not dismissing out of hand by any stretch. I just don't know. There's a P.T. Barnum quality to him that where we look at it through sort of a conventional political lens, we see one thing, and it's a little bit of the Rashomon effect. And people who don't live, you know, their lives in the day to day politics, they look at it and they see something very different. And it really, what he really does always is frame himself as one of two choices. It is either go with Alvin Bragg and Adam Schiff and Nancy Pelosi or go with me. And for a lot of people that are center right, that's an easy choice. And, you know, and he understands something, too. He's got to win a primary before he wins a general. And I think he's positioning himself. And I think this development with Bragg has helped him immensely politically.
Oh, I think it's helped you. But bear in mind that the Democrats want the same framing that Trump does. They also want to say, well, this is binary. You know, Joe Biden may be senile and ineffective old guy, but it's him or Trump. You know,
well,
that's
exactly
the way the Democrats like to see it.
I understand. But, you know, but they may be miscalculating, particularly depending on where the country is in 2024. I'm not saying it's pretty. And I'm not saying I'm endorsing every choice that Trump makes. But I mean, I'm just trying to put myself in his shoes and think, is what he's doing, does that make sense for him with his specific political interests? And I'm having a hard time seeing how it doesn't.
Oh, I don't disagree with you. No, I think that he does this dance with the Democrats. I think he really kind of collaborates with them. And he wants to frame things the same way they do. And like the Democrats, Trump wants himself to be the face of the Republican Party. You know, in 2020, Trump was running for re-election at the end of what was really a very successful term as president. And of course, COVID was a big factor there. That's got to be taken into account. But the reality is that even when Trump was running as a successful incumbent who could legitimately claim 4 years of peace and prosperity, you know, he couldn't beat the fumbling, stumbling Joe Biden. And I don't think there's any reason to think he's going to be stronger in 2024 than he was in 2020.
Go ahead. Well, his tactic at Waco, I was watching it. I liked what he said about education. You know, no mandatory vaccines or mask mandates in any public schools if I'm president. But he was acting out like Ron DeSantis crying and begging for his help when he ran for governor of Florida. And the crowd seemed eerily quiet to me as he was doing that, and it felt very uncomfortable. So that we just can expect that until 2024?
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, here's Donald Trump, and he knows his chief rival for the nomination is Ron DeSantis, and he's launching attacks on him. Until now, you know, DeSantis has stayed out of it and has only been complimentary toward Trump. But speaking of COVID, you know, DeSantis made a very good point in an interview the other day. He was asked about Trump and differences between the two of them, and he said, well, one difference is how we handled COVID. You know, Florida was the free state, and we all know that. Whereas it was Trump who was going along with all these shutdowns, and Trump actually gave Anthony Fauci the Presidential Medal of Freedom, I think it was. He said, you know, and DeSantis said, well, I would not have given Fauci a medal. You know, so I think there's a lot, apart from the fact that he's just got a tremendous record as governor of Florida, which he obviously does, I think there's a lot that DeSantis has here to fire back with.
Well, that's it. So now we're getting somewhere, too, because to me, if you want to go after Trump in a Republican primary, it is not this sort of high hat. Oh, heavens, the tweeting or the truth socialing. Oh, that's this comment and that comment. All that does is rally Trump's base. But if you want to present things that Trump said and did about COVID, that's a different story. And he's got some vulnerability there. And people who are erstwhile Trump supporters are pointing it out. I mean, for example, Justin Hart reminded us of this tweet from Trump at the end of April of 2020. Despite reports to the contrary, Sweden is paying heavily for its decision not to lock down. The United States made the correct decision. And of course, in retrospect, no, Sweden. We did not. And a lot of us knew it at the time. And Justin Hart points out it wasn't until August at Scott Atlas's arrival that Trump changed his mind and moved away from what Fauci and Birx were recommending across so many fronts when it came to COVID. So there's a real reckoning on the merits there, and you need to present it to people in a dispassionate way, not in the way of like, you know, how dare you or Trump's rhetoric or he's unelectable. I just think you need to go back and say, you know, when these judgments had to be made in real time, Trump made these decisions and DeSantis made those decisions. And who do you think made the right decisions. I think you got to be pretty cool in how you present that and a little bit less moral indignation in the direction of Trump.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And I think it's telling that that's exactly where DeSantis went. The first time he's asked in an interview to differentiate his record from Trump's, that was the first thing he brought up. And I think you're right, Dan. I think it's a powerful theme. And there is a broader point here, and that is that we all know Trump is not a traditional conservative, right? He's his own kind of unique flavor of conservatism. But one sign of that is that he does not have the sort of intuitive skepticism of government power, you know, Dan, that you have and
yes.
I have and
yeah.
Ron DeSantis has and most Republicans have. Trump, I think we saw it here. Trump didn't have any problem with exercising massive government power in a way that really limited the freedom of the American people.
That's right. That's absolutely right. John Hinderaker, president of the Center of the American Experiment, contributor Powerline, powerlineblog.com. John, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you, Dan. Bye-bye.
Hi, thank you, too. It was great being with you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Florida named Will Robinson in the Sarasota area was given some witness slips to read, people that were testifying in opposition to legislation he was taking up in committee. And this is how that went. Danger, Will Robinson, danger.
What do you mean? Okay.
In opposition, Anita Dick is an opponent. Waves in opposition. Holden Hiscock is also an opponent.
Holden?
Holden.
What? Holden. Holden Hiscock is Mr. Hiscock here.
Mr. Hiscock, party of one. Your table's ready.
If you want to have fun, great target audiences. You want to have fun at somebody's expense, play a little practical joke. Great target audiences, politicians, and members of the media. Of course, on the other side of the country, you'll never forget this one.
KTVU has just learned the names of the four pilots who were on board the flight. They are Captain Sum Ting Wong, Wee Tu Lo, Ho Li Fook, and Bang Ding Ao.
Yeah, Bang Ding Ao was injured, but he's fine.
That was the worst thing ever. I mean, yet funny, and we still laugh, and I'm sorry, but it's juvenile laugh. But somebody, so the backstory is there was an intern there, you know, on the weekends, they kind of have a skeletal staff.
I don't care what the backstory is.
Well,
the
backstory is. Ripped it off
yeah,
the printer,
and
like,
he just,
these,
and he just read
now.
It. Yeah, he just read it because he's Ron Burgundy. Right, yeah, I got it. And so, point is that this is how the world becomes impossible to parody. Nobody's ever seen The Simpsons. Everybody out there is Mo Sizlak.
Hello, I'd like to speak to Ms. Tinkle. First name, Ivana.
Ivana Tinkle. Just a sec. Ivana Tinkle. Ivana Tinkle. All right, everybody, put down your glasses. Ivana Tinkle.
Hello, is Mike there? Last name, Rutch.
Hold on, I'll check. My crotch. My crotch. Hey, has anybody seen my crotch lately? Mo's Tavern, Mo speaking.
Yes, I'm looking for a Mrs. O'Problem. First name, B.
Yeah, just a minute, I'll check. B O'Problem. B O'Problem. Come on, guys, do I have a B O'Problem here?
You sure do!
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The clownfish, Leah Thomas. He's in the news again.
Yeah.
Because March is Women's History Month.
Yeah, where's my gift, you people? You're
and
slacking,
so,
okay?
So ESPN is profiling women of great renown like Leah Thomas.
In 2022, swimmer Leah Thomas became the first transgender athlete to win an NCAA Division I championship by winning the 500 freestyle. The Texas native competed for three seasons on the men's swim team at the University of Pennsylvania. She began her transition after her sophomore season and after a gap year due to the pandemic that forced the Ivy League to cancel all sports. Thomas made her debut as a member of the women's team in December 2021.
Being trans is not a choice. I didn't have any other choice because not transitioning was not leading me anywhere.
She competed amidst criticism from the swimming community, competitors, and teammates. She said she hopes her persistence serves a larger purpose.
People will say, oh, she just transitioned, so she would have an advantage, so she could win. I transitioned to be happy.
I transitioned to be happy. Great moments in female sports. Leah Thomas winning a national championship.
It was hardly celebrated. She's on the podium alone. All the other real female athletes on that stage were far right.
I love that. Great moments in female sports history. First year she's a woman and she wins a national championship. It reminds me of the Chappelle riff on Caitlyn Jenner. Imagine that, Caitlyn Jenner being she was honored for as Woman of the Year by some organization, and Chappelle's like, her first year as a woman, and she gets the Woman of the Year nod. He's like, all those women in Detroit must have been looking at this. Well, what the? She's never even had a period yet. She's already Woman of the Year. What a first year. Right out of the gate, Rookie of the Year. Same thing with Leah Thomas. Isn't that wonderful? That's something that Leah Thomas said. I was just using she for the purposes of illustration and comedy. I transitioned to be happy.
Yeah.
It's really telling because the whole trans movement is sort of the dark triad characteristics coming together, beginning with narcissism. It's about my happiness at whatever cost.
Yeah, I don't care about the other people on my team, the women who fought to get on this team. Mm-hmm. As long as I'm happy. But she doesn't even know if he's going to be happy. Like, people transition thinking, well, this is my true self and real me. It's not easy being a woman. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
But they think, the grass is greener on the other side. You do hear me, right. Sister.
I'm going to go out and burn my bra after the show.
Yeah, let's go.
So, less interested in Leah Thomas, more interested in the larger Women's History Month, great moments in women's sports, Leah Thomas. How do you receive that? How do you receive these debates that are going on in state legislatures around the country? You heard in Mike Scott's newscast the bathroom legislation being advanced by the Marxists in Springfield to further the narcissism and Machiavellianism and psychopathy of the left. There's dark triad characteristics I was mentioning.
There are tampons in the boys' locker room at Loyola.
Of course there are.
But somebody explained to me, because when we have swim meets, the visiting team uses that locker room. I'm like, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have to bring our own.
So, in Nebraska.
Yes, sir.
State Senator Megan Hunt, because they're debating the same sort of legislation, but from the opposite side, because Republicans are in control of the legislature, the unicameral legislature in Nebraska, not the cultural Marxist, the new Marxist like in Illinois. And Megan Hahn, who's a Marxist, has a message for those advancing legislation that would say there are two sexes and boys don't belong in the girls' room. The basics we've been debating, talking about for years now. This is good to hear, this perspective from State Senator Megan Hunt, because as you listen to her, ask yourself the question, can't we figure out some sort of compromise? I think we can. Reasonable people can disagree about the truth. Okay, and we can come to some sort of understanding. Do you think that?
312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro text line. Our text line's always open. 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Throughout the entire course of this negotiation, let's see, today's day 49. So, you know, for the last 49 days of conversation, which with the speaker, with other legislative leaders in this body, has kind of revolved around this bill, frankly. We've made it clear that this is a line in the sand. And people have said, well, what if we go after your bills? What if we put a bunch of bills introduced by progressives up on the agenda? Are you going to filibuster those too? Yeah. Yes, because we're not like you. We have a principle and a value that actually matters that much to us that we're willing to stand up for. This is how much this matters to us. You guys really don't get it. You really don't get that the session is over. And you're asking what precedent this sets. Is everything going to be like this now? Anytime anybody doesn't like a bill, is it going to be like this now? Subsequent motions, taking time, filibustering every bill? No. The fact that you're asking that shows me that you really don't get it, Senator Von Gillern. You really don't get it. You've crossed a line and you've gone too far. This bill harms me in an unforgivable way. And this is a line that you don't cross with me. If you cross it today, you're staying on the other side of it because you have done irreparable harm. And you're doing harm to the body and to Nebraska as well. Don't say hi to me in the hall. Don't ask me how my weekend was. Don't walk by my desk and ask me anything. Don't send me Christmas card. Take me off the list. You don't know me. We have no relationship. And if you don't believe me, if you think I'm going to cool down and change my mind, you should believe me. No one in the world holds a grudge like me. And no one in the world cares less about being petty than me. I don't care. I don't like you. You aren't welcome in my space. You aren't a safe person for my child to be around, or any child, frankly. Don't believe me? You should.
I believe her. How about you? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Do you understand this is total war? If you don't understand it, I don't know where you have been for the last 40 years, as it's been one march after the other. And the attitude has always been the same. It is nicely exemplified by State Senator Megan Hunt of Nebraska. Total war. Well, we just have to. I don't want to. Okay. You appease and they advance. Your appeasement and fecklessness, I'm talking about sort of the gooey center-right Republicans and some cowardly conservatives, you know, keyboard warriors that don't do squat other than that. Your appeasement and fecklessness is provocative, and this is the response it generates. In deep red Nebraska. Any Republican going to say anything like that in deep blue Illinois? Hell, leadership will be on the votes to advance the left's flags, as they are on everything from cultural issues to taxes. Gosh, I wonder how things are the way they are. It's a real mystery. State Senator John Fredrickson, through sobs, Nebraska State Senator John Fredrickson, I can't stop thinking about parents. He's the first openly gay man elected to the Nebraska legislature. Good for him. Can't stop thinking about the parents. He read a letter from a constituent who said her son would have taken his own life if he hadn't been able to get gender-affirming care as a teen, meaning if he hadn't been able to be mutilated as a teen or have his body chemistry artificially altered as a teen. Maybe. I don't know. But for every letter that John Fredrickson has, we have testimony before legislatures, at colleges, at municipalities, Chloe Cole. I've got one right here. A woman named Precia Mosley who testified before the North Carolina State Senate. But the point is not to go back and forth with sob stories with people who are in a difficult place, in a dark space, confused, sick, particularly as pre-adults, as under the age of 18. That's not the point, because that's a losing game, that game of sentimentality. The point is to say, get your wits about you and stiffen up and say, look, this is biological reality. This is how we organize a civil, decent society. This is what we've done for a long time. It works. It respects young men. It respects young women. And that's what we're going to do, because it is right and proper and consistent with everything we know to be true, scientifically, morally, and in every other way. And if you don't start from that premise, then you're just bailing water as the left takes you under, the same way we did on marriage redefinition. But listen to what that state senator from Nebraska said, and believe her, because I do.
Me too.
She means it. She's total war, and so many of us are kicking around saying, what tampons in the bathroom? What's the big deal? Leah Thomas on University of Penn team, what's the big deal? What's the big deal? What's the big die training at work? What's the big deal? Putting somebody else's kid ahead of my kid at college because of their identitarian intersectional score. What's the big deal?
It makes them happy.
Is anything the big deal to you? Is there any line that conservatives will defend? Some will. Some are making that point right now. Many are. School board candidates, even in Chicagoland. Trump in Waco yesterday. DeSantis during his tenure as governor. Some are. A lot are not. It'll just all work out. No, it's going to work out. Ralph and Rantoul.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Hey, I have one request and then I have one example. By the way, that woman that just talked, yeah, bring it on, girl, because I'm not going to back off for the likes of you. One of the things that we can stop doing immediately is conforming and using the nonsense language like transitioning, all right? You can't change your sex. You can mutilate yourself a lot. People have been doing that for a long time. Not encouraged. Usually people that do a lot of self-mutilation regret it later. I think it's a sign of a bigger problem. Then here's the example. I recently had an interview for a professor, full-time professor at a university. I won't name it at this point. Maybe later. But it got to the point of the interview where the black female guy person asked me about diversity and running a classroom. I said, yeah, here's my diversity statement. I don't care what color, race, religion, don't care. Do your work, stop whining, eat your vegetables, shut up. You're going to find out that when you get out in the world, people are actually going to expect you to produce results for the money that they give you. And if you haven't learned that yet, maybe you will later, unless you go work for your rich daddy who doesn't care what you do and just supports you throughout your pathetic life. Hey, guess what? I got the job.
Really? Oh, boy.
Yep.
Wow.
Oh, good for you.
Well, congratulations. That's like a Morgan Freeman release from prison moment. You just sign your papers and let me go back to my cell. No, you're out. All right. Okay. Yep. Impressive, Ralph.
I thought it was funny that they stuck me with the token black female PhD to ask me the die questions. I'm like, I'll give you a die question, girl. You know.
All right. Very good, Ralph. Thanks for the call. Kyle in Schererville, Indiana.
Hi, Dan and Amy. I was just listening to your show, and actually this morning I have four kids. My 7-year-old's a boy. He was watching some TV, and an Amazon commercial came on. I don't know if you've seen it.
I've seen it.
Yeah,
I know
it.
It's a young lady, and she's got a mustache, right? And she's dancing around a room, and she's looking at pictures of Freddie Mercury. And my son calls me in the room, and he's like, Mom, is that a boy or a girl? What is going on?
It's Tony Preckwinkle.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
And I said, that's a girl. I don't know why she has a mustache. You're right to be confused about that, because girls don't have mustaches.
Well, some do.
And, you know, my kids and I talk the whole way to school. They go to private school 20 minutes away, you know, about boys are girls, or girls are girls, and boys are boys, and everybody wants to confuse you right now, but there's nothing to be confused about. Like, there's, it's never going to change. You know, you can cut yourself in 10 different ways, but at the end of the day, you were born a girl and you'll always be a girl. And it's like, why as a mother am I having to have these inane conversations with my children because they can't watch a commercial anymore?
Thanks for the call,
Yeah,
Kyle.
You've seen that commercial too, right? I saw it with Peyton and Eli this week, and like, whoa, what is that? And I said, I don't know. You tell me. What is that?
Yeah, it's a chick with a porn stash. She looks like Dave Wonstadt. But here's the thing. It's intended to be shocking.
Right.
It's intended to shock you, to normalize. And then she's happy. She's in some dance. And she's dancing like Freddie Mercury when she goes to class or something like this. The point is to mainstream and to say, you know, you're a bad person because if you don't support this, then you don't support that girl's happiness. So I say, you want to play that sentimentality game, you have got to start from a premise of truth and defend the truth relentlessly, with the same relentlessness that they seek to undermine it. Steve in Burbank.
Hello.
Hey,
hello.
Steve.
Hi, I got a little song in honor of Leo.
Yeah.
When I was just a little boy, I asked my teacher, who shall I be? Shall I be Leah? Shall I be Jack? Here's what they said to me. Que sera, sera. Whoever you'll be, you'll be. But if you're Leah, you'll see that first place trophy. But you'll sit to pee, lose that fine goatee, go androgyny.
Pretty good, Steve. Thanks for the call. Pretty good. Pretty good voice, too. Pretty good pipes.
Good delivery. Yep.
Uh-huh. Not Jose Feliciano, but pretty good. Wow. Follow that. Brian in St. John, Indiana.
Yeah, that was a tough one to follow. Check your email, Dan. I got another superintendent mad at me. So thankfully I live in Indiana, so I can reference some law and defend myself. But nonetheless, I'm calling on behalf of this Leah Thomas stuff because last week I found out about a show called I Am Jazz, and it's on TLC, and it's got 8 seasons, so it's not new. But it's the story of a family letting this little boy transition into a girl. And now she's, you know, she was a teenager at the time. Now she's 21 or so. I watched the first episode and the last episode because I'm one of the weirdos that watches the opposition research and whatnot, so I know what they're talking about. But nonetheless, she's overweight by like 100 pounds or something. So she's obviously not happy. So it's just trippy, man. And anyone that's not willing to stand up for their kids or their nieces or their nephews, shame on them. This is war. It's crazy. That's all I got.
Thanks for the call, Brian. And again, just the lies the left has to tell to cover the false premises from which they start. NPR. I mean, they just say things that it's like the sun doesn't set in the west sort of things. NPR tweeted out that, quote, there is limited scientific evidence men have a physical advantage over women in sports. I mean, there are decades and decades of research into this, including recently. And if it isn't obvious based on actual output, like, you know, Usain Bolt's 100-yard or 100-meter time versus the top female's 100-meter time and high jumping and basketball. And if you don't look at the skeletal structure of men versus women, generally speaking, I mean, it is just,
I mean, come on,
it is beyond refutation. And yet NPR is attempting to refute it. Why? Because they have to cover one lie with another. Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. This story. Oh, boy.
What?
Barbie Bassett is a morning news anchor in Mississippi. One of these ghastly morning shows that are unwatchable. Painful topics, even more painful segues, phony baloney happiness. Ugh.
It's everything Dan Proft hates.
Exactly. So these dopes in the morning in Mississippi, you could cut and paste them to be the dopes in the morning in Chicago. There's no difference. None of them are an actual three-dimensional human being or know anything. So what are they? They're talking about some, you know, they're just riffing on stupid topics. So they says Snoop Dogg has a new addition to his California wine offerings. Snoop Dogg wine. So I'll skip that wine tasting. The topic turns to like, oh, would you like to collaborate with Snoop Dogg? Would you, Barbie Barrett in Mississippi, collaborate with Snoop Dogg if you, or Barbie Bassett, if you had the opportunity? And she said this.
Well, we know it. She'd have a Snoop Dogg tattoo on her shoulder.
A shizzle, my nizzle.
I'm telling you. Julie, what do you think about that?
For shizzle, my nizzle, she said.
I don't even know what that means. What does that mean?
It's like a Snoop Dogg, you know, it's, I mean, that's like a Snoop Dogg pat line, which is why Barbie Bassett in Mississippi knows it, because Snoop Dogg is ubiquitous in culture, and he's been saying that for, I don't know, 30 years? How long has the guy been around?
Long time.
Well, she got pulled off the air.
Why?
Because, in case you don't know, for shizzle my nizzle, nizzle is slang for the N-word.
Which one is the okay, got it. I just want to make sure I got this right.
Slang for the N-word. So she gets yanked off the air. They're talking about collaborating with Snoop Dogg. She throws out like a Snoop Dogg aphorism, you know, tagline. And she's yanked off there. I think she's gone. She's been like off the air for 3 weeks. I think she's gone. Listen to her reaction. This was her reaction. She had another slip up.
Oh.
I'm confusing her slip-ups because, you know, now we're pouring through her record.
Of course.
She apologized in October of 22 for referencing a black reporter's, quote, grandmammy on air. Grandmammy. She said grandmammy. She apologized at the time, so this is, you know, a year and a half earlier. Though not intentional, I'm not a year and a half earlier, but it was 6 months ago. Time flies. Though not intentional, I now understand how my comment was both insensitive and hurtful. I apologize to Carmen Poe. This was the reporter. Now I'd like to apologize to you. This is not the heart of who I am. From for that, I humbly ask for your forgiveness and apologize to everyone I offended. I'll learn from this, participate in training so I can better understand our history and our people. I can't mend my hurt the common cause. I pray you'll forgive me and extend grace through this awful mistake, so on and so forth. So she's a serial offender, you see now, because she referred to a black reporter's grandmother as her grandmammy. And now she has used a phrase that only Snoop Dogg or maybe Dave Chappelle is allowed to use.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
I know you don't care about a Mississippi news anchor, and you shouldn't care really about any news anchors, but that's not my point. Point is, like, these quote-unquote slip-ups, was it even one? The point is, living in a culture where your neighbor is seeking to jackpot you and tolerating that culture, and the people who are tattled on have to sort of genuflect and throw themselves on the mercy of society for and beg for forgiveness so they'll still be allowed to exist in civil society. You know, the stuff doesn't mean anything until it happens to you or somebody that you care about. We do this all the time, and then we get calls. It finally happened to me, or it happened to my daughter, or it happened to my neighbor, and now I'm all worked up about it. This is where some proactivity is required, much like the conversation we were having before the break about this trans business. Some proactivity is required. No, I'm not going to be a party to the mob. No, I'm not going to always look to take my neighbor in the worst favorable light. I'm not always going to look to tear somebody's life apart over an innocent, even sometimes if it's intemperate and purposely so, an innocent or an intemperate comment that I know is not reflective of them or where the punishment doesn't fit the offense and so forth. I'm going to exercise some restraint. I'm not going to be part of the goon squad that sends people to the stake for a good barbecue.
Because she's not going to get a job anywhere else. She's marked also, for life.
She's also a little bit past her sell-by date, frankly.
Well, okay.
I mean, are you saying she's not in her prime, Don Lemon, and that I need to Google it? Is that what I'm hearing from you?
No.
Speak up, Sonny.
Yeah, Google a picture of her.
No, I saw. I know. You know, it's because I've been in situations like that. Just, they're trying to be funny and lighthearted, and that's the price you pay. I mean, I've...
No, it's not the price you pay.
No, this one's different because I never even... When she said it, I thought she was trying to be funny because I did not know what the meaning of that was.
Do you think she knew what it was?
Of course not. That's why her bosses should relax. I mean, not take her off the air. What? Take her off the air? She doesn't even know what it means.
Here's
I bet they don't even know what it means. I'm sure some like nosy, you know, listener or, you know. No,
yeah, so that's slang for the N-word. I'm offended. We're going to boycott your station. And then they say, oh, get Barbie Barrett off the air. Or whatever her name is. Barbie Bassett.
You know, the clip used to be on Mediaite. It's not even on Mediaite. I wonder why they took that.
Charlamagne the God is a black talk show host, popular one in New York. We've played clips of him before. He's had all the leading lights of the left on. But he often goes against sort of the black left orthodoxy. At least he thinks for himself a little bit, and he's doing a little bit of that thinking for himself here. Here's what he said about it.
I don't know if that's fireable. Because it's for shizzle, my nizzle.
She might not even know what nizzle means, yo. Come on, we got to stop, man. That's not a reason to fire that woman.
We got to stop, man. It's not a reason to fire that woman.
Isn't she black?
Perk? No.
Okay.
But the problem is that what I don't know if Charlamagne realizes or not. See, you open these gates, and it's very hard to close them. See, when you erase lines, it's very hard to redraw them. This is like Shelby Steele. Like you, when you lose your moral authority to say anything is right and wrong, to say that anything is substantive or artificial, to draw these lines of judgment. When you lose that, well, then you just have a Hobbesian state where political might makes right. And so that's what we have now. So Charlemagne might not like the decision of the mob, but sorry, Charlemagne, too late. You've already endorsed the mob. The mob doesn't need your endorsement anymore. You see? That's how it works. If only people just knew a little bit about the history of mankind. Only a little bit skeptical about mobocracy. I know that's a bridge too far in Illinois, but some other places maybe. Mary Kay in Western Springs.
Oh, hi. So, hang on. I'm in a parking lot. Yeah, sorry, Dan. When I get on Spotify and try to find a song and I put the word, the N word in there just to see what pops up. So all their stuff pops up, you know, all the rappers' things. And, you know, that's fine for them for sure. And, right, that's normal. And, of course, if I ever even came close to uttering that word, what's the new word? Schnoozle? Snoodle? Is it Snoop Doggy Poodle? Yeah,
stop.
What's the word?
Stop trying to.
Don't try.
No, don't. Don't. Just retreat.
I would never say that, but I mean, I would never be on the air and say that because I don't even know what that means, and it's not funny. It's just happy talk gone wrong with bosses that are not backing her. So it's an NBC affiliate, and they can't comment on personal matters.
Matt on the South Side.
Hey, good morning, guys. I was actually listening. I'm reading this article last night, and I thought I saw her mention something about she was going to be educated and re-educated. And I just can't imagine that in America, I've heard more and more about this, about being re-educated or educated on sensitivity. And I never thought in my lifetime that we'd be seeing that word used like that. Honestly, I laughed about it, but it really isn't funny, and it's really getting insane. So I just wanted to mention that. 41 years old, and I never heard so much about re-education.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Matt. So the grandmammy comment that she made about a black reporter's grandmother, ostensibly.
I don't even know what that meant. Yes, what about that?
Okay, so here's how it could play out. If we hadn't lost our minds in the West, say the reporter says to her, you know, grandmammy has sort of a pre-Reconstruction connotation. And can you just refer to my grandmother as my grandmother or my grandma or whatever term that reporter uses to refer to her grandmother? In this case, somebody could have said to her, you know, Barbie, I don't know if you know this, but that. It's sort of funny when Snoop says it because he's a, I don't really know if he's a gangster rapper, I guess, sort of kind of was used to before he became a corporate shill. But regardless, it's different when Snoop Dogg says it. We receive it differently than when you say it. And just so you know, if you didn't know, this is what it means. And she can say, oh, gosh, well, I didn't know. And I won't use it in that context again out of respect for you. I mean, it could be that. Could be as simple as that. So where people in Chicago didn't know about this story because it's being reported in every outlet because somebody made an issue of it and then the management at that network affiliate folded and now this chick's out of a job and we're all debating whether or not it was proper for her to use the word and we get into why can black rappers use it and honkies like me not use it. So it doesn't matter. All that stuff is the frickin' babble that the left wants you to engage in. If you have a problem with what somebody says, innocently enough, I mean, she wasn't in a hood burning a cross, for God's sakes, then you say, you know what, Barbie, just so you know, I think you don't appreciate what you said, and just FYI, you don't go get the steaks. And that's what we do as a society. It's wrong. It's wrong to be on the lookout for opportunities to destroy people, even people you don't like. Defeat them at the ballot box? Okay. Destroy people who are not doing anything other than presiding over a unwatchable morning show. Or is your colleague on the machine floor or in the HR department or in some academic department at some university, and you're always looking to round up a posse at what you consider the slightest infraction because you're doing what? You're doing what? And this is what I'm talking about when I call for proactive speaking of truth and telling people what time it is and the way that we're going to live peacefully and comfortably with one another, because this is not the way. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, Lee on the South Side, in response to our conversation about that Mississippi anchor and her Snoop Dogg invocation. Lee, go ahead.
Yeah, Dan, Amy, thanks for taking the call. You know, this is part of being a literate America. I don't care what your race is, what part of the country you're from. Don't speak like a fool. Words have meanings, as you say, and I say with my family very often. Like this whole dumbing down of the American language, not the English language. I don't spell theater R-E. Theater is E-R, right? This is ridiculous. And when people that don't know what they're talking about try to seem hip or cool, such as my daughter, my wife, my sister-in-law, it doesn't. You just sound like a goof.
Thanks for the call, Lee. All right. And by the way, somebody sent me a text. I referred to Snoop Dogg, you know, gangster rapper turned corporate chill. It's like, corporate chill, how dare you? And the picture is him on a package for Bic lighters with Martha Stewart. I mean, yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Or he could be him sitting on, what is he? Is that Corona? Him sitting on a beach with Andy Sanders. Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.